Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Happy New Year to all of you. Welcome back to the Speakeasy. This is Damon Bolte in the studio in Heritage Radio Network in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. I can't even believe this. I hope, first of all, I hope everyone had a great New Year's Eve and had fun, but, you know, it was very responsible or not, whatever. I hope you're all still with us. I last had my guest today. And this is, okay, I'm just going to say this real quick. So, it's a new year. Been doing this show for a lot longer, I guess, than I realized, because the last time I had my guest on the Speakeasy was in March of 2012. And that just seems crazy to me. So it's been almost 4 years since Toby Maloney's been on the show. And last time we spoke, it was actually, it was even colder than it is now in March. And we did a phone interview because we didn't want to, like, have you come through and trudge through all the snow and bullcrap. But, yeah, anyway, it's great to have Toby Maloney back on the show and in the studio this time. Welcome to the show, Toby.
Thank you very much, Damon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you in. Well, dude, almost 4 years. That's crazy.
It's like cocktail years or something that every year seems like seven, but at the same time, they go by really fast.
Yeah. It's wild, man. Well, you've been very busy. I mean, you're always busy. Last time you were on the show, we talked about all the bars that you'd been involved with and also the projects outside of the city of Chicago, but most notably the Violet Hour. And I want to congrats on your James Beard.
Thank you very much.
That's really amazing. Impressive. Jesus, let's talk about what you've been up to, man. Most notably today in the New York Times, it announced that you become the beverage director, bar director for Mother's Ruin and Lorenzo's, this new spot out here in Bushwick. Right, why don't you tell us, let's start out with Lorenzo's, man.
Okay, so Lorenzo's is a Latin-themed bar, restaurant, actually restaurant bar, I would put it. Out right off the Jefferson stop in Bushwick. We are just gearing up for the new year, and the menu's changing over, and we have a new cocktail menu going, and we're just getting ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, so let's talk about how long has it been open now?
It's been open a few months, yeah. But this is kind of, it was very soft in the beginning, and now we're actually just really gearing up to do press and looking forward to bringing in the people this new year.
I went there about, I guess, a few months back. I was just kicking around that part, Bushwick, you know, off the Jefferson stop, and I was with a couple buddies and ended up rolling in, and I can't remember how many rum shots we did that night, but it was nice to see you there. You looked happy, and ran into a bunch of buddies. And it was, from what I had heard, it was like nothing like what I expected. Because knowing you and your pedigree and your background, I expected it to be like a very like cavernous like cocktail
dark,
den,
no windows.
Know? Yeah,
yes,
and it was quite the opposite.
It is exactly the opposite. We've got these huge, like garage doors that are all windows. It is cavernous in a great way. We've got beautiful art on all the walls. We have 17-foot ceilings.
You got space. That's what the main thing about it is. You got so much space.
Yeah, and yeah, it's wonderful to work in a spot that's like that after so many years in the no window cocktail speakeasy sort of thing.
It must be a huge change for you from, like, you know, Milk and Honey back in 2000 and being on the Violet Hour in these places to, like, go to a place that's, like wildly open and like, inviting and light and bright, you know? Like, it must be kind of strange to... Do you feel, like, a little, like naked?
A little bit, yeah, without a doubt. That having that much space and having that much light in the beginnings of the night is very bizarre. But, you know, there's a lot of people eating and it's very convivial. So, you know, it makes sense to do it that way. And then certain nights we have DJs and we bring the lights down a little bit and get more playful and convivial. So it's a lot of different things.
Yeah. When I remember the night I've been wanting to go back. I work so much though. It's hard for me to get away. You know, I understand. I'm sure you understand that. But yeah, it was definitely like, it was a freaking party in there, man.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That's the point.
It was, I really like the fact too that, like, you said it's a restaurant. I mean, like, the kitchen is an open kitchen. Like, you can see, like, everything that's going on back there. And I thought that was really cool. I think that's, to me, like, you know, especially when you go to places like Death & Company or even just, like, pretty much anywhere on that block, you know, if you go to, Mother of Pearl on the corner, for instance, too. It's like, you might not ever realize that, like, those places actually have food. PDT, of course, doesn't have food, but they have that little window that they slide open. Yeah. But you don't really think about the food when you go to places like that. So I think that that's kind of like I think it's been an important step in modern cocktail bars, that the newest ones that are coming out. It's like, you're actually exposed to the kitchen to even know that there is, like, food available there, right? You know?
I think that's definitely a trend that's happening more and more, that back in the days of these cocktail meccas and places outside of New York City as well, where, you know, you had to have food, but it was downplayed to the least amount. I mean, we all hear stories of cocktail bars that have, like, 5 lean cuisines and a microwave in the background to do their food, you know.
To get past the, SLA and everything.
But I think one of the new trends that we're having is we're having not only really good food, a lot of, like, having food, but having really good food and well thought through food, and not, I mean, God bless PDT and Criff Dogs and that makes total sense for the neighborhood. But, you know, we have a chef, Corwin Cave, who is coming to us from the Fatty Crab world, and his food is just spectacular. So, you know, I think this is a place that is really restaurant driven, and, you know, the cocktails are there, they're fast, they're not fussy, and so it's this much more balanced sort of place instead of, you know, just a restaurant with a not well thought through bar, or a bar with just food because it has to have it.
I feel like it happened in this, I think it's been kind of like this head to head, like, nose race that's been happening, but it's, like, just in, like, a few tiers, though. But, like, what had happened for the longest time is, like, these restaurants with bars always focused on food. They didn't focus on so much. It'd be like the wine list.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily so much about the beer or the spirits or the cocktails. And then after a while, it's like, oh, well, we should have a good cocktail. We should have a good bar program here in our awesome, like, award-winning restaurant, you know? And then that caught up, and then the bars just kind of, like, went past the restaurant, and then the food fell back, but now it's kind of come back. Now it seems like they're really even, you know? There was this, like, kind of, like, push and pull, like, kind of,
there was definitely a push and pull. There were numerous places that I know that there was a huge friction between the kitchen and the bar because of the type of press that one was getting, and some chefs were not so pleased with that, and which was strange because, you know, I've been doing this bartending for a long time. The bar in the back were always, like, tight, that we had the booze and they had the food, and so we got fed and they got drunk and everything was good. So to see that little bit of time where there was this kind of, like, all right, who's getting more and doing more and pushing the envelope more, I think we're past that now, and we're moving into this much more collaborative time.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that this is kind of the way I saw it go down. Is that the bar, as the bar started elevating their game, we could, like, talk to the chef and the back of the house would be like, hey, man, what do you think about this? You know, like, I got this idea for this, but, you know, I'm not sure about this, like, flavor pairing. And then, you know, we absolutely have the kitchen to thank for the beginning and still, like, these days, like, the concepts for new cocktails. I mean, it's all about the kitchen, you know, like, it starts at the kitchen. But I'm sure there was, like, a little friction because, you know, like, they were giving us some good ideas and guidance, and then all of a sudden we're all getting, like, a bunch of press for it, and they're like, what the hell is going on here?
You know?
But, I also think that, and this has, I'm probably going to get some hate mail for this, but it has nothing to do with, like, the old school chefs, because it, I think, has a lot to do with, like, the up-and-coming cooks and chefs who are, like, really driven, and they want, I think there's, like, a lot of young heart that, like, that is involved with a lot of the modern cocktails, you know, and a lot of the best bartenders I know actually came from the culinary world anyway.
Absolutely. Yep.
But, and they're still, like, heavily involved in the culinary world, you know,
and I think that's one of the things that's missing in a lot of the, and I guess I'll take my brunt of the hate mail for this, is that a lot of the bartenders, the young bucks who really could use some time in the kitchen just for, you know, learning how to make the syrups and understanding how to deal with fresh ingredients and how to deal with dried ingredients, and, like, you know, 6 months in a kitchen, I think, would make everybody in the world better, I think. But I think that's something that is really missing in this day and age, kind of like stages or education for bartenders, is that culinary aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, the first one I can think of, knife skills.
Yeah.
You absolutely should not be cutting yourself behind the bar. That is a bad look.
It is a bad look. There's nothing good with little bits of blood, fingerprints on your glasses, or, like,
or the finger condoms or just duct tape or whatever. It's like, man, I always tell, like, all the bartenders that I train, I'm like, you know, like, these are all beautiful bar tools and shakers and glassware and everything, but, like, the most important bar tool you have,
the hands.
Your hands, man.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I think that I totally agree. You know, when approaching making new cocktails, first of all, you got to, like, understand the classics, and you got to understand the formulas, and you got to understand, you know, like you said, like, fresh ingredients, dried ingredients. But just having, like, nothing happens overnight. You got to take time with that. And a lot of the new guard, and it's great that we have so many people who are interested in taking this on as a career path.
Absolutely.
I think it's amazing. You actually have the ability to get into the bar world and the culinary world and turn it into
a career.
A career.
And you don't have to be embarrassed when somebody says, so what do you do for a living?
Exactly. Which, you can actually be very proud about it, you know?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who have been doing it for quite some time, to where it used to be the case, but now it's changed quite a bit. I mean, you know, you can really, really feel good about what you're doing. And I think, you know, yeah, absolutely. It's great to have, like, a lot of new blood, but, you know, it's like, take time and learn, you know.
Absolutely. That,
we didn't learn this overnight.
Nope. The whole 10,000 hours thing, I think, is an absolute necessity, that you have to spend 10,000 hours, and it's not just 10,000 hours working point in a cocktail bar. It's in that 10,000 hours you have to spend a good amount of time bar backing and washing dishes and, again, doing some cooking or some pastry or something like that, and getting a wider base. And then, you know, I think waiting tables and being a busboy and, you know, seriously working the door and getting an idea of how, you know, a restaurant or a bar is like a 3D puzzle, and everybody plays their little bit. And a lot of times I think people who've only worked in one facet of it don't understand all that goes into all of the other facets of it. And it just makes you a better bartender if you are a good server, or you're a good doorman, or you're a good dishwasher, because you understand all of those other aspects and how it all comes together into this one beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue talking with my buddy Toby Maloney. Just a moment.
following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
And we are back. You are listening to The Speakeasy, and today we have Toby Maloney of Mother's Ruin and Lorenzo's, new place out here in Bushwick. Actually, not very far from here. It's like one stop over. So... Lorenzo's, you definitely have like more of like a Latin like tropical kind of vibe. And do you think that but you were telling me before like that you came originally from like kind of like club bar world, then you spent like, you know, over a decade in like the cocktail bars, and now you're getting back into the club thing. And what have you like kind of club vibe environment, like kind of more party like style thing? But what are some of the biggest changes like that you've noticed with the drinks, as far as like what used to be served in back in the, you know what I mean?
back in the late 90s, yeah. You know, everything had sour mix in it, and everything was either bright green or bright red, or, you know, and people would order the Alabama Slammers and any sort of shot that had some sort of 12-year-old sexual innuendo in it, and you know, vodka reigned, flavored vodka reigned above that. Yeah. So, you know, it's a cool time to understand those drinks, and then to have all these fresh ingredients, and then to be going back to the idea of free pouring, but using fresh ingredients, which are, you know, sour mix off the gun. If you hit it for 1 second or 3 seconds, it's not going to change the drink very much.
Yeah.
But, you know, a one count and a three count or a four count of fresh lime juice is going to change the drink a lot. So, you know, it's this idea of taking those ideas, the club speed,
yeah,
the knowledge of the cocktails and the templates of the cocktails, and then putting that together into a free pouring program, which is very interesting.
Free pouring is a very interesting thing because, I mean, a lot of people are, you know, it's kind of a black and white issue. I think if, you know, again, like going back to what we were talking about before the break, like if you got enough practice doing it and you test yourself, like I think that's one main thing with free pouring is if you test yourself occasionally.
Every time you work, I think that you should come in and calibrate your count.
Yeah, totally. And so if you're doing that, then you should be fine. In theory.
In theory, yes, you should. Exactly.
But, I mean, like, that also goes along with tasting every drink, you know?
Absolutely.
You kind of have to in that situation. Like, whereas if you're jiggering, like, you know, this Negroni is going to be the same every time.
There's a little bit more leeway with a Negroni than, say, a daiquiri.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really interesting, too. I mean, like, obviously, I don't think that Lorenzo's is like, I don't think the drinks are tiki, but they are definitely like leaning towards the more fun, like tropical, like side.
Yeah, of kind of poolside sort of. That's what I envisioned when I was going into it, and so with the hubris of thinking that I was going to make something great and easy, and it was going to be simple, I went in like, oh, I got this. I'm just going to take all of these Latin drinks and then use fresh ingredients, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And they all sucked the first time. So I had to go back to the drawing board, and then I took the Latin out of the drinks and just kept the Latin in the ingredients, and then basically went back to classic cocktail recipes that, you know, our pisco sour is Encanto and lemon and a simple syrup and egg white, but our simple syrup, we add hibiscus to it, and then we throw a couple of dashes of peychaud in it too. So yeah, it's just the smallest tweak to these classic cocktails.
Yeah, I mean that's how cocktails are invented, mostly, man.
There's still only four cocktails that have ever been invented.
They're the mother sauces, you know?
Yep, the five mother sauces, exactly. Yeah. Escoffier.
Yeah, totally. yeah, that's... I mean, when especially, like, in a place like Lorenzo's, where a lot of it, like, because that place gets packed and it is kind of clubby, there's, like, it's like a lot of it's standing, you know, in standing room. There's a DJ and all stuff. So, like, in that situation, you might, like you said before, you know, you kind of need to make these things in a speedy fashion because, like, and, like, also people, I don't think people that are standing and dancing or give a shit about how much mole bitters you put in it.
Nope.
You just have to make them really fucking good. And like, and it's interesting.
Gotta be a little bit, yeah, and it's got to be a show as well. And, you know, having three or four bottles in the air at a time adds to the party. That's and awesome. We're working on this program.
Are you doing a flair program?
It is ever pertaining to that, but it's certainly not. It's like working flair, and there's a couple of things that we're working on.
Dude, can I come by whenever you're training on that?
I'd love to.
I need to learn some new tricks.
This is, again, it's, I wouldn't call these tricks. It's just, we've been looking at ways to make drinks faster, specifically with speed pouring. So we've got a couple of things that were, again, I thought this was going to be the easy part because I had seen it done and I'm like, oh, this is going to make sense and it's going to work perfectly. And took a tumble the first few times, so we're still working towards that. And we do the company does have a club in the pipeline coming down, so this is also part practice for the full-on dance club that we'll be doing.
That's awesome yeah, cool, man. And also, like, one of the things that you guys had carried over from Mother's Ruin is the dress Tecate can, which I can't even tell you how many hundreds of those I've had in my life.
Right. I think we're keeping Cholula in business in a pretty large way. That, yeah, it's such a classic that TJ and I worked at the Rusty Knot back in, I don't even know, 2003, 2004, something like that.
I didn't realize it'd been around that long.
Yeah, we were the openers. I was consulted on the program, and he was one of the opening bartenders. And the first cocktail, the first mixed drink, I don't even know what to call it. The first thing that manipulated alcoholic libation that I ever had was like 10 or 11 in Tijuana. Juarez. And my parents gave me a couple of pesos, told me to go away for a while and run around. Juarez was very different back then.
Yeah.
And I found a guy with an igloo cooler, and I walked up, gave him some pesos. He opened it. He pulled out a Tecate, cracked it, and he had a salt shaker, and he shook that, and then he had pieces of lime, and he squeezed that in there and handed it to me, and it was like 120 degrees, and I hit that first really cold iced Tecate with salt and lime, and it was awesome.
Change your whole world, man.
Exactly. You know, the second or third drink weren't nearly as good, and so because of that, we had Tecates with salt and lime at the Rusty Knot, and we just couldn't keep Tecate in the coolers because it was just flying out. And you know, TJ took that idea and made the Michelada version of it with that, and it's
a staple.
It's a staple now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I know Jay Zimmerman does it at Basic, you know, like it's I think he does it with Budweiser though. Fine.
Yep. Perfect.
But yeah, I've definitely done that a lot too, man. Speaking of, man, Mother's Ruin. Let's talk about Mother's Ruin for a little bit. I mean, I've gotten behind that bar once during like one of Brian Miller's Tiki Mondays, and those damn Tiki Mondays. I never remember the end of them.
Nope. I don't think anybody does.
It was pretty cool though, because it was the first time I had done a Tiki Monday where we were actually batching the cocktails, which was a total game changer.
Totally, yeah.
Because the first two I did were not that.
Those 12 touch drinks are brutal.
And that was also when you like were writing your own menu.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally just shot myself in both feet, man. But I always had a good time there. And like, oh man, I mean, like, outside of the micheladas and all the other goodness, frozen drinks there also.
Yep.
Man, that tomato soup and grilled cheese, good God.
The food is always surprisingly
so good.
Yeah. Yep.
So good.
And just what you want when you've been drinking more than you should.
Well, it goes back to what we're talking about the restaurant bar restaurant, you know, thing.
Yep.
It's definitely I feel like both elements of that place, outside of the environment and the staff and everything, I think they're like kind of like equally important at that bar.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's really impressive that they're just so like right there, you know. It's really cool. So what was the main focus with the opening of Mother's Run? Was it to be more of like a neighborhood bar?
Yeah. TJ and Richard, when they opened it, if everybody remembers what it looked like, it was a work in progress when it opened. Mm-hmm. That was kind of one of the cool things about it was to go in there and week by week, some little things were changing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons it's become this institution is because so many people in that neighborhood
grew with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have one of the most amazing group of industry regulars in the history of bars in New York, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, by 2:30 in the morning, you look around the room and you know everybody's first name and you know where they work. And there's a couple of civilians, you know, sprinkled through there, but it's one of the things that I think just keeps it so alive and vibrant.
Between that and Attaboy, you're gonna run into quite a few people, you know, at that time of night, for sure.
Absolutely.
And maybe you go to both places in one night.
That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it is. I've done it. I've tried it.
Yes, me as well.
I'm sure you have.
The only thing worse would be to, if you live in Williamsburg,
to go to Extra Fancy
is the third nail in your coffin. Yeah,
I've probably done that one too. I've probably done the trio, and still good time. So, Mother's Ruin has always been a really cool place, it's one of those places that you kind of like. I don't know. At least to me, like, you know, as I opened my bar, I was like, dude, I want my bar to be like this. I want it to be like, I want this vibe. I want it to be like really like welcoming and like neighborhoody. I want some good food. I want good drinks. And I want to see like a ton of industry people like every night.
Yeah.
It's getting there. It's getting there. But Mother's Ruin and Lorenzo's, man, you're killing it right now. And you're, like you said, we shouldn't talk about it yet. But I know you've got a couple more things coming down the line. So when you do finally want to open up the floodgates on that conversation, then I'd love to have you back, Toby.
Awesome. That would be a pleasure. Yeah.
And I guess we're at the end of the show. So maybe let's go to Lorenzo's, man.
All right. Perfect.
All right, guys. Check out Lorenzo's. Check out Mother's Ruin if you haven't. And check out Toby Maloney, man. He's one of the greatest living legends of bartending in the world. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Happy New Year to everyone, and check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this. Cheers.
Cheers. When the rhythm and blues that sound, it's gonna get you some.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.